Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Tuesday, everyone, and this is the Ask Dr. Goodman Show. I'm Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our calling numbers are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1 and we'll cue you into the show. You can ask Dr. Goodman questions as well. And thank you, 93,000 listeners, for tuning in to Help for HD Radio. Tonight, we are discussing the drug pudopidine. And Dr. Goodman writes in her recent article, Pudopidine and the Hope for HD Neuroprotection. In a new laboratory study from Italy, investigators have reported a very exciting result for Huntington's disease. Pudopidine, the drug presently in clinical trial for HD, was shown not to just treat motor symptoms, but also provide neuroprotective benefit in a genetic mouse model of Huntington's. You can read her article at hddrugworks.org. And Dr. Goodman, hi. Welcome back to your show. How are you?
I am good.
Good. Thank you. Have a good fourth?
I did. It's very hot in Washington State.
Oh, boy.
Yep, 90s. We're not used to that here.
Oh, are you having a spell?
We're having a very, very hot, dry summer. And if it continues, we'll be in a drought range as well.
Uh-oh. So let's talk about pudopidine. Now, can you guys hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, good. I have a new mic, so I want to make sure you can hear me. Okay, so pudopidine is a Teva Pharmaceuticals drug. And now, is HSG still enrolling for PRIDE-HD? This is the PRIDE-HD study, right?
The recruitment is over, enrolling is over, so they're fully enrolled.
Great.
They're no longer recruiting, but it is a year-long trial, so even though all of the people are in the trial, it's going to be another year before the results are in, because, you know, the final group of people were recruited, you know, just in the last few weeks. So even though everybody's recruited, and that's big, we have another whole year until the trial is complete.
Very good. So how many did we get enrolled? Do we know?
I don't know whether they reached what they wanted, the 400 I think they wanted. I don't know.
Okay. So you're
but
talking
a large
about...
number.
That's good. That is really good. So tell us about the article. You're talking about pudopidine and, sorry, my phone's ringing. So this is a neuroprotective possibility, right, for pudopidine?
That's right. Now, pudopidine is, of course, has been in a couple of clinical trials earlier, and there's some of the participants that were in those earlier trials, the heart trial here, and have continued on the drug at the dosage, the 45 milligram dosage. You're a popular lady.
So
in that open label group, there have been, you know, there's still a bunch of people on that 45 milligram dose. And three of my patients, actually, and support group members, have been on that drug or on that open label trial, and just, you know, three people, but they're progressing slower than I would have anticipated, and I hope that is borne out in other people who have been in the open label part. So it's not placebo controlled, that one. So you won't be able to say that for sure, but at least in my small part of the trial, in my patients, they're progressing slower than I would have anticipated. So I'm very glad to see this article on the mouse. Now, remember that what I'm talking about is a genetic mouse model. It's not people results. But what they showed is that giving Pridopa, they showed actually a couple of very interesting things. One for neuroprotection and the other for dose escalation in later disease. I want to talk about that too. I think I'm going to talk about that first. They were able to show that pridopidine in the mouse, you know, helped with motor things, helped with various motor tests in Huntington's mouse. As it looks like it does in, you know, the earlier heart trial. But they showed that pridopidine's effects went away as the mouse got older. And then they found that getting a larger dose of the pridopidine made the motor symptoms better again.
Okay.
I'm going to say that again.
And that's what dose escalation is, right?
I'm sorry?
And that is what dose escalation is?
Yes.
Okay.
They treated the mouse at a dose they thought was best for an earlier disease mouse, and they kept them at that dose, and then it started, you know, not working anymore. And then they increased the dose on that mouse, and the motor symptoms got better again.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. The same, that larger dose was gave side effects in the earlier stage mouse. So that suggests if those results go forward to people, that we may see that its effect on motor symptoms decreases over time, and that they might get better with an increased dose. Now, this is not something terribly, it makes sense in some ways with Parkinson's disease. Doses increased over time often. The dose, you wouldn't use the dose that you might use in the beginning of therapy would not be a dose that you might use later. So it's not so surprising, but it is also very positive that if that correlates and goes on to show that can happen in people also, then that's a very positive and good thing to know for people if and when this drug is approved. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. Now, has there been any indication of cognition improvement as well, or is it too hard to know now? Yeah.
Well, in the pridopidine study in mice, let me back up. In the heart studies, I don't believe there was any. The heart study was just 6 months long. The equivalent one in Europe, I believe, was about a year long. And if my memory is correct, and it may not be, there may have been a trend towards some improvement, but there was nothing that was statistically sure in terms of cognitive benefit. But this is going to be the present study is a year long with more participants, which gives greater power to the study, and also larger dosages are being used. One of the things that they did for the in the mouse study is they did show that protective neurochemicals go up in the mice. The BDNF, that's important, is actually goes up with pridopidine in the mouse, and that's often, you know, scientists think that has something to do with improving cognition. The various systems that improve cognition. So is it theoretically possible? Yes, but of course you have to wait for the fat lady to sing with the clinical trials.
Now, the BDNF is the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, but you stated in your article that also the DARPP32, and I have no clue what that is. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, that's a protective neurochemical also. So if you're looking for neuro these chemicals that are pro-life, that promote the health of neurons, the DARPP32 is one of those. And that is a compound like BDNF that goes down as disease progresses.
Okay.
Don't ask me what it is, because I don't know. I'm sure it's known what it does, what it is and what it does. Like, it's just that I don't know. But it's another neuroprotective chemical. So they were trying to show that this is, you know, it's consistent, you know, that for neuroprotection, that these two things are up when you give this drug.
Right. Now you talked about previous studies in ACR-16. Oh, that was a clinical trial as well.
That was the heart trial.
Okay, that was the heart trial. And is that related to the PRIDE trial?
Well, it's the same drug. It was a pridocaine within the ACR-16 trial or heart trial. At the 45 milligram was the highest dosage that was used in that one, which is now the lowest dosage being used in, other than placebo, of course, in the PRIDE trial.
Okay, so,
drug, different dosage, and it's going to be a longer time of the trial in the U.S.
So the lowest is 45, what is the highest?
112.5.
Mhm. And how did they determine which dose to give?
To mice?
In the human trial.
Well, I am not privy to that. I don't know. I'm sure there were toxicology studies in animals that were done that gave them some guidance. In those earlier ACR-16 trials, there were no more side effects reported if you were on the drug or placebo, which means that they didn't know if a larger dose might give better benefit. And it means they could go up. They did not show that there was a high dose that in that trial that gave side effects. And usually you want to see that to know that you have gotten to try to balance, try to get the best benefit without giving side effects. And if you don't have side effects at any dosage in the trial, well, then you don't know if it'll be better with a larger dosage. Of course, you don't know if there may be side effects, too. And that's why the trial is being done at so many different dosages.
Right.
Did that make sense the way I explained it?
Yeah.
I hope. Okay.
Yeah, and then there's dose escalation that might happen as well.
Well, in this trial, I may have used the dose escalation wrong when I said it earlier. In a clinical trial, they do dose escalation in this PRIDE trial. You start out with a lower dosage, and those people who are going to be on a higher dosage then get the higher dosage next time they come back for a visit. And that's a dose escalation. That's why there are so many visits. There are more visits early in the PRIDE trial. And it's usually used in the setting of a clinical trial. But, of course, we increase it. The doctor in the office will increase the dose of a, you know, blood pressure medicine. If the lower dose isn't doing what it's getting as much benefit as you want, then you increase that dose. So that's probably dose escalation. I think we should reserve for the clinical trials. And not the doctor's office.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used it incorrectly earlier.
Okay. Now, did you want to talk about the new trials coming up with the VX15 and the...
When we start talking about neuroprotection, and potential neuroprotection for pridopidine in people, you know, we can say wow about that. This, you know, the present clinical trial is not likely to give anything definitive about neuroprotection because it wasn't, they're looking mainly for motor changes, motor benefit. Of course, they're going to look for other things. And who knows, they may find that things like functional capacity is better in those people who took, you know, who took a certain dose of the drug. And then that would be a signal that it might be neuroprotective.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to be able to prove, it'd be unlikely that they would be able to prove that it had neuroprotection in this trial because they're not doing MRIs or other things that would give more evidence for neuroprotection potentially. That would need another trial.
Mm-hmm.
Coming down the pike, not just coming down the pike, but in the pike, one of them, the leclinimod mm-hmm. that is in clinical trial, plus a new drug in the first stages of getting ready for clinical trial by put out by Vaccinex is the name of the company that's in Rochester, not far from where, you know, the Huntington Study Group is located, their primary mm-hmm. offices. And it will be
perfect.
A Huntington Study Group trial that is on another agent that looks like it modulates or it decreases certain kinds of inflammation that go along with making Huntington's disease worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the root cause of Huntington's, but whatever gets set off that's wrong with Huntington's or multiple things, it causes, it sets off an inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
And then that inflammatory response in itself speeds the disease process, speeds the fire
mm-hmm.
of the disease process. So if you can interfere with that immune response, which makes BDNF and the neuroprotective chemicals go down, if you decrease inflammation, those neuroprotective neurochemicals actually go up. They go up when the leclinimod, the one that's being used in the present Legato trial that's still recruiting,
mm-hmm.
plus this new drug, yeah, this new drug by Vaccinex, which works in a little bit different way, but probably impacts the same neuroinflammatory pathways. Both of those are going to be looking for neuroprotection by doing MRIs, and in the Vaccinex trial, the doing PET scanning as well. Another fancy scanning, brain scan procedure. There's another drug that's had a lot of mouse study reported, a drug called fingolimod. All these funny names here, but they have a mod at the end at least. Is a drug that's already approved for multiple sclerosis that's shown some pretty good stuff in mouse models and in actually two different mouse models. And it's always good to have good results in more than one model. It suggests that you're really getting at something here. And this is a drug that's already FDA approved. Side effects known. Now, the fingolimod one, or the one that's already approved for multiple sclerosis, and the one that's in the Legato trial are probably similar drugs, but not the same.
Now, is the fingolimod mod also a Teva drug?
No. It is a Novartis drug. I don't know why
Novartis.
I remembered that, but I did. It is I'm almost positive it's a Novartis drug.
Okay.
A big drug company. So here we have three different. Now, I don't know whether Novartis is going to go forward with a clinical trial in their drug that's already approved
mm-hmm.
for for multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's so. But if they did, you know, that'd be three. So what it tells us is that's a mechanism, or that targeting a drug at that system, there are a lot of big companies really interested in that.
And the system is, you're talking about inflammation, right?
Yes.
Right. I'm actually on the HSG site right now, the Huntington Study Group site, and it's talking a little bit about, it says ongoing HSG research studies and clinical trials. A signal is at the top, and it says it's a phase 2 research trial using VX15 and novel monoclonal antibody. So that's interesting.
And what it does is it targets a protein receptor that's, if I understand it correctly, it targets a protein receptor that turns on this kind of inflammation. So mm-hmm. if you block that receptor with an antibody or with a drug, but then they're using an antibody, then that prevents helps prevent or tones it down the inflammatory response. Now, the other drugs I talked about, the loquinamide and the fingolimod, work at a different part of the pathway than the monoclonal antibody does, but they're targeting the same system. It's a complex system with, mm-hmm. hundreds of proteins involved, just mm-hmm. more than you want to think about. And so the drugs are targeting different ones in the same or similar cascade of events mm-hmm. that happen to cause inflammation. So a lot of drug companies are working on this, three of them perhaps, and two for sure, and maybe Novartis is going to get involved too. I don't know. But it tells us that system looks important. And our mouse models are suggesting that this is a good one to look at. And mm-hmm. one of the exciting things about, I think, the neuroinflammatory drugs or the prevention of it is that it looks like it's not yes, motor things and life is better and life is prolonged, but cognition is better.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do things with mice. They put them in a open kind of field, and they give them an old object, or they give them an object to look at and learn. Mm-hmm. And then later in the disease course, they give them a second object to look at. And mice who get the drug, the Huntington's mice who get the drug, are interested in the new one, whereas mice who don't get the drug stay with the old one. And if you put them in mazes, the mouse given the drug actually does as well as the wild mouse.
Huh.
And they climb, they climb ladders better. So their motor benefit too, but pure cognitive testing looks better, at least in these mice.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the brains of the mice, there are the nerve connections, nerve-to-nerve connections are a lot stronger when the drug is given. And those kinds of connections are very much related to cognitive action.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm getting at is there are some drugs that besides the cell therapies that's being done in Sacramento or going to be done, or the ISIS trials that are going to be ISIS drug that's going to be the gene lowering therapy.
Mm-hmm.
There are other neuroprotective things, coming to be tested. So not mm-hmm. just symptoms, but neuroprotective things. Now, so far, these immune drugs, one of the things about pridopidine, for instance, or the Auspex drug or xenazine, they improved symptoms that you could see. You know, you gave the drug and there was less chorea. The pridopidine, we hope, you know, you give the drug and other motor symptoms are improved also. That's what we hope. But the new drugs coming down the pike may not, you're not going to take the drug and see that some symptom is improved. What you may instead see, the thing we're looking for too, is something that slows down the disease, that delays the onset of symptoms. Now, you're not going to necessarily feel better. You're not going to feel better after you take this drug. Because what it's doing, it's not treating a symptom, it is slowing it down.
Right.
So it's maintaining function longer, normal life longer. So it's a harder thing. So you have, when you take a drug, of course, this is what we want.
Right, of course.
But it is... Also, you're not a person in a clinical trial or at the end of the clinical trial is not going to feel better. They're going to have their disease slowed down. So it's
right.
a different kind of a different concept of thinking about it. You're probably not going to feel better after you take this drug.
Right. Hey, look, we've got a caller. Hold on. Let me grab this call. Hello, you're on Help for HD Radio. Ask Dr. Goodman Show. This is Melissa. Hello. You want to ask a question? Hello? Maybe they just want to listen. Oh, well.
That's okay, too.
Go ahead. That's okay, too. We want you to listen. So let's talk about the, you talked about the drugs for HD heroes. What do you mean by that?
The pridopidine story is, I think, fascinating. I remember back when I was starting to be more of an advocate, being more vocal in Huntington's. I was, you know, doing various research, and I came upon this drug that was, you know, given a name. Given a long number, and I saw that this drug, when given intravenously to a patient and with more advanced Huntington's disease, they got better. Their chorea got a lot better. They were able to talk and walk when they hadn't been able to do that before. And this was in a report in 1999. I said, wow, this must be a great drug. So, and the inventor of that is a neuroscientist and neurochemist from Sweden, who Nobel Prize winner, who knows a lot about, knows, you know, probably more than anybody else about various dopamine things, and he invented this, or he learned about this and invented a drug that he thought would modulate or help with dopamine function in schizophrenia, in neurodegenerative disease. And he developed a certain molecule, and he did some initial work on it I'm not sure what all initial work on it, but then it got sold to a big Japanese pharmaceutical company who stopped work on Huntington's disease. They got all excited about schizophrenia, and then, just didn't do anything more with Huntington's. And this was common in that generation. You know, let's go for the big markets. So this hero scientist went back to the lab and made another molecule, similar probably. I don't know what the first one looked like, but probably, and how it was, the second one was different. But that was the drug then that was ACR-16. And when he sold the rights to that drug, he went to NeuroSearch, that small a smaller biotech company, and he said this has to be developed for Huntington's. That's only the reason. I'm only going to sell it to you if you do it for Huntington's. Now, this scientist, I can't pronounce his name, you'll see it in my article, a Swedish name, a person who was involved in early on in research with the Hereditary Disease Foundation, Nancy Wexler's family foundation. So this guy goes a long way back.
Are you talking about Dr. Carlson or Averid?
No, Carlson. Yeah, Carlson. Averid is his first name. Carlson is his last name.
Okay.
And I couldn't get the first one out with my list, whatever. But a real hero working for Huntington's went back to the lab, did more work on another molecule that could be used for Huntington's. And that was, 20 years ago at least, plus, that he was working on this drug. And then it's gone through the earlier clinical trials by NeuroSearch, and then a delay until Teva bought us the rights to it. And now it's going into another trial. So there's many, many steps along the way. And let's say this drug turns out to be approved and it's good for Huntington's. It took 20 years. And that's not so uncommon in the past, taking 20 years from developing it in the lab, and that's what Carlson did, and getting it to people. It takes a long time. And there are a lot of heroes, and what I wanted to get in this story, the first guy is a big hero who pushed it, and then there are companies and scientists and people in clinical trials, investigators, doctors, just hundreds and even thousands of people before it's over. Before you get a drug approved, there's been that many people working on it for a couple of decades if this comes to fruition. So there are a lot of heroes, and Dr. Carlson is a hero, and he's well sung because he has the Nobel Prize. Right. All of our clinical trial participants are unsung heroes. Every single one of them. As I was at a support group meeting last night, and one of the fellows there was in the earlier heart trial, and he says, "Well, I'm taking one. I took one for the team." And, this was a fellow who had to drive long miles to get to the clinical trial, and his wife, because it takes, and here our geography is such that you sometimes have to travel a bit of a distance to get to a clinical trial site here.
Yeah.
And that's what these heroes do. They take it for the team, and they're unsung, and I was trying to sing a song for them. In this article,
it's a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah, think of these. We have to increasingly think of and know in our hearts that if we get treatments for Huntington's, these heroes, we need more heroes, and we need to acknowledge and celebrate our heroes. And encourage others to step up and be heroes, too. So that's my cheerleading post for the day.
I agree. And then Dr. Michael Hayden, he was out of Canada, right? He's with Teva now. So
he is, and he's a big hero also. He's been working on it for decades and decades.
Yes.
And he is, and he's in the article, too, of course. He worked in the lab long, very, very one of our very smartest Huntington scientists who has worked in the lab on many, many different things and knows a great deal also about dopamine. He's another dopamine expert. He knows it backwards and forwards, what is known about it. And now he is in a position in an important drug company to push drug development for Huntington's. Now, it's also happening in other big companies too, but Teva took the step forward to get this pridopidine moved, which may be turn out to be a very, very good drug. We'll see. I'm optimistic about this one.
Dr. Hayden must have seen the potential in it, right?
Yes, of course.
Yep, for sure.
I mean, he wouldn't have been promoting it into clinical trial if he didn't think there was great potential, or was potential in it, enough potential to help Huntington's people to make a difference.
With millions of dollars invested, right?
Oh, for sure. Millions and millions.
Great
to get clinical trials done, it takes millions and millions of dollars to get a drug all through development and clinical trial and through the FDA. You're getting up there to a billion sometimes, and sometimes more.
Yep.
Not just a million.
Great article. Great article. I love the heroes. Song for the heroes. That's a good thing. We definitely need more heroes. We have a lot, but we need more.
Right. Yeah.
And we do appreciate those who can participate more than we.
Yeah.
I think
it's hard work. And they also take a risk. Being in any clinical trial is you take a risk, because risks are, you don't know what the downside of it might be because it hasn't been tested in this way before. So there is also a risk that people take whenever they're in a trial for a new drug. We don't get anywhere, though, without taking a risk or two. And with Huntington's, we're going to need to take a risk or two to get to better treatments. When I say we, you know, it's me down here who's not doing it, but hoping that others will. Yeah.
Right. Lots of work to do, but it takes time. It just takes time to get through the trials and all the different phases.
Yep.
And
right. I think one useful thing to think about as we come to neuroprotective trials that may not, you know, you may not feel better when you take them. You know, it's like taking cholesterol drugs. You may not feel better, but maybe it will help prevent, you know, a stroke or a heart attack or something down the pike. So what you're doing is you're trying, it's a preventative sort of thing. So these drugs, you might think of it as preventative in a way. So you might want to, I think part of the FDA is going to be having this meeting in September, wanting to hear from individuals with Huntington's and caregivers and advocates about, you know, what's important and because it's at the FDA, they want to hear what's important for drug development, you know. And, of course, they're going to be asking about various things, motor things, cognitive things, psychiatric or behavioral things. And, of course, all of those things are important. One of the things I think they will also get at is how neuroprotective, how much neuroprotection would you need to have before you would want to take this drug? 5%? Is that enough? 10%? 25%? Particularly if the drugs carry with them, you know, more risk than the drugs we've had before. And those are things I think we need to think about, and I think the FDA is thinking about that too.
That meeting's on September 11. Is that correct?
I don't know. I have it on my calendar, but I don't have the calendar in front of me.
It's called the PDUFA meeting.
Yeah.
FDA PDUFA. Yeah, we're hoping to be able to go to that, but I don't know. I mean, I think HGSA has a number of people going. Of course, they're up in that area, too. So.
Yep. I'm going to be going to that meeting. I've been to the F1 for Xenazine approval prior, and they're very interesting meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a Xenazine meeting?
I'm sorry?
There's a Xenazine meeting?
There had been before drug approval, as a part of drug approval. They wanted to hear from people about what they thought about Korea and if it was important.
Are they taking patients or are they looking for medical professionals?
And families?
Mm-hmm.
No, they're interested in getting input from families.
Mm-hmm.
I made up a little survey. You know, I'm good at making up surveys, you know, that asks some of the questions that I think that the FDA, there were certain questions that they wanted you to think about that they put up on the website. And so the survey questions reflect that, my survey. You know, going to a meeting, you can espouse your own view, but if you get input from other people, then it's not just your view, it's other people's view too. So this is something I've been doing on a voluntary basis with support group members. I can send it to you and you can have a look at it and see if it's worth putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's voluntary. That could potentially be, you know, useful to the FDA.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to present my own blah blah blah. It should be reflective of a larger community.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yes, we want them to understand a lot about what we're dealing with and about. You know, what medications are helpful and that kind of thing.
And what kind of medications we want. The FDA wants to be helpful and approve good medications. But they want to know what kind of risks, I think, that Huntington's individuals are willing to take with new treatments. Are they going to step up? Let's say they approve a new drug that goes in a spinal fluid. Are Huntington's individuals going to be willing to do that? And I think in Sacramento they had done a similar survey with the procedure that's being used for the stem cells there. They had wanted to find out people's opinions. You know, let's say this drug is effective. Would you be willing to have this procedure done?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with any drug or treatment, there needs to be an explanation of benefit, potential benefit, and potential risk. So there's greater risk, of course, with giving a pill is not as great a risk as giving an intravenous, as is giving a spinal fluid drug into spinal fluid, or giving or giving it directly into brain through a catheter.
Mm-hmm.
So, what kind of risks? What kind of interventions are Huntington's people willing to think about? And how much benefit has to be there before they would think about getting a treatment that way?
Mm-hmm.
And those are very important questions to think about. I don't have any answers, but they're important for the community to think about. These new immune modulatory drugs are going to have more side effects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People with multiple sclerosis take them, but they, you know, there are various risks associated with drugs. And, you know, how much benefit do we want to see before we would take that risk for whatever new thing is coming. Hard question.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting to me that they're figuring out that the inflammation is what's causing a lot of the symptoms. But it's logical, too. It makes more sense to me. I mean,
I didn't understand that statement.
Well, okay, so inflammation, meaning if you're taking medications that are going to address the inflammation, like the antibodies, it makes more sense to me. It's logical to me that what causes symptoms in HD is this inflammation.
But that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. And how do we get rid of that?
Well, these drugs are trying to decrease it. They're not going to get rid
mm-hmm.
of it. I use the analogy, think of rheumatoid arthritis. I'm a very old doc, okay? And when I was in medical school and a new doctor, rheumatoid arthritis was a terribly deforming disease.
Mm-hmm.
You died early and you were very deformed. You couldn't walk. You know, it was a terrible disease. And with the advent of various drugs that could change the inflammatory response, it didn't treat the rheumatoid arthritis at its root, but it changed the inflammatory response to it. And now people, you know, live with rheumatoid arthritis. You know, they're not cured, but boy, they're a lot better.
Yeah.
They can have normal lifespans, not be deformed. Yes, they have pain still, and there are flares. But these drugs have improved life, prolonged life, preserved function for a long time very well. But these drugs carry risks. You have to be careful about infections. You
mm-hmm.
have to be careful about drug interactions. So it's, you know, they're tougher for a doctor to use and tougher for a person to take, but they're worth it. They prevent the deformity, or they prevent a lot of the deformity. Now, of course, that kind of drug also treats symptoms.
Right.
The flare or the swelling will go down. The swelling and the pain will go down. I mean, your goal is to treat the inflammation before it gets to the swelling, and there are ways to do that that are fancier now. But unlike Huntington's, we're not going to have swelling that we can measure. You know, what is our flare in Huntington's? It's going to be different. So we're not going to be able to necessarily feel better. Now, neuroprotection will mean that we won't get as bad motor symptoms, cognitive symptoms, or behavioral symptoms, probably. But you're not going to be able to measure, you know, oh, I took this drug and my joint is better.
Right. Now, in the signal study, they're doing MRI and PETs, right? Would that show...
I'm sorry, in which study?
The signal, you know, the VX15... trial that HSG is doing. They're doing the MRI and the PET scans, right? So would that show the less inflammation, or is that
a biomarker? They're hoping that they will that the PET scan will indeed there are different kinds of PET scans, and I'm no expert on PET scans. Whether they're measuring PET scans, usually when we use them as a regular doctor, and they're used primarily, it doesn't have to be a scan of the brain, we look at increased or a change in a metabolic picture. For instance, if you're looking for a metastasis or a cancer spread to an organ that you can't see by other measures, you can see it by a PET scan. It will pick up the signal. Now, there are different kinds of PET scans, and again, I'm no expert, and that's an understatement, in research PET scans, but there I'm sure that, you know, as sure as I can be, that they have done animal studies that direct them what to use and what to look for, what to measure on their PET scans.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a way to measure either activity. I'm going to guess inflammatory activity is what they're trying to measure. With their MRIs, they're also looking to see if there is some, you know, preservation of brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm certainly not the one to ask about, you know, exactly what they're doing with these imaging studies, but they're looking for neuroprotective signals.
Yep, and this one here is an infusion, so it's not a pill.
Right, it's an intravenous infusion, once a month, I believe, for six, I think the trial is 6 months long. I don't know all the details of the trial. Will this drug carry some risks more than, taking a pill of xenazine? Probably, you know. Yeah, but the payback in terms of neuroprotection, if the drug works, is pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take greater risks if we're going to get greater benefit out of things, and that's true in cancer. It's true in multiple sclerosis, and I'm sure it will be true with Huntington's too. But we've never thought about that. We haven't thought about that very much because we haven't had these things in clinical trial.
But we do now. It's coming to university.
It is coming. And it's coming. It's coming. It's here because we have two clinical trials that are going to be looking. And actually, this Vaccinex one actually says something about potentially slowing down disease progression or onset of symptoms. It says it right there.
Very interesting.
On the HSG site.
There's a lot of hope out there. We just got to keep going. We can't look back. We just got to keep going forward.
There's a lot of excitement, but it means work.
I know.
A lot of work for clinical trial participants, for their coordinators, for all of the people involved in clinical trials. But this is our time to really be active in these things. Now, excitement only gets us so far. It's the work that gets us down the path. Yep.
Well, thank you so much for bringing all this important information forward to us. And it's kind of it's confusing for a lot of us. You know, there's so much happening right now. It's, you know, before we had one or two or three clinical trials that were happening. Now we're looking at many more.
So we were lucky if we had one.
Yeah.
You know, at a time. And so now we have one, two, three. You know,
more.
I mean,
possibly
the pregopidine one, the laquinimod one, the Vaccinex one. Those are, and there's also, of course, the PG-10 inhibitor one.
Yeah.
And there's, so there are three new drugs in or soon to be entering clinical trial and potentially this other one that's already FDA approved. I don't know whether they're going to go forward with that or not. But there's a lot of things. So there's three drugs, new drugs in clinical trial right now, and there's one coming soon. Four clinical trials going on at the same time, four new drugs.
Okay, so how do we find out what these are? So there's a couple of different ways. You can call HSG at 800-487-7671 or email info@hsglimited.org. You can also go to www.hdtrialfinder.org. That is HDSA's new registry. What do you call it?
It's a
registry. Yeah, it's a registry. Right. And they can connect you with clinical trials that you would qualify for. So that's another way. I think it's really important that we put this information out to the community as in our support groups.
And talk to your doctor at, you know, your Huntington's doctor. You know, ask them what's happening in your region. Doesn't have to be necessarily at that hospital where you are, or at that institution. There may be a neighboring institution that has the trial. Ask your doctor.
Right.
They might not volunteer it during a visit. So ask them, hey, I'm interested in a clinical trial. The other thing, the very important thing when these clinical trials, that we know that they're coming, is to enroll in Enroll HD.
Right. Enroll, yeah.
That is, I think, the most important step to take. If you want to be in a clinical trial, then and you check that box when you do the enroll visit, I want to get information about a clinical trial if it comes around, then they will you'll be on for, you know, first on the list to tell about a clinical trial. You won't have to look it up. They will let you know about it. So I think the very best way, and to save yourself time, a person time enrolling in Enroll HD, will get you get information to you first.
Right. So, is that enrollhd.org?
I think it's net.
HD.
If you're in front of yours.
Let me see. No, it's enroll-hd.org.
Okay. All right. I thought it was net. No, it's HD Buzz that's net. Okay.
That's it.
I forget these things.
Okay, so it's not it's not enrollhd.net. It is enrollhd.org. I'm putting it into the chat. Oops. Doggone it. Oh, it's giving me a hard time here.
I always Google things.
Sorry about that, everybody. Yeah, sorry about that. Let me just double check on that. Maybe you are right. It doesn't seem to be coming up right for some reason. Enroll-hd.org. Let me try to copy that over. I'm trying to put it into the chat room so folks can pick it up from there.
Very good.
That did it. Okay, and then we have HD Trial Finder. .org. There we go. And HSG MITED.org is another one. Oops. HSG Limited. .org. There we go. So I put those into the chat room for everybody in there. Gosh, I think we're out of time in about 2 minutes here. So did you have anything else you wanted to add to our program today, Dr. Goodman?
Oh, I've yapped long enough, probably.
I think you're up to 37 shows now, which is pretty amazing. And
I think we're both
up. Okay, so
it's nice to talk to you once a month.
Oh, it's great to have you, and the information that you bring to us is just so practical and usable, and it's brought to us in a way that we can understand, and that's the important thing, is that we can understand what it's all about, because there's a lot of information out there, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, Yep, we have upcoming shows July 28th. Actually, Pfizer is going to be here to talk about the PDE10. One day in July, I'm not sure what date yet, Dr. Pignopoulos will be here to give us an update on kids JHD. August 4th, hope you'll be back with us, Dr. Goodman, on the Ask Dr. Goodman show. And August 11th, Dr. Kyle Fink from UC Davis Stem Cell Center, stem cell program, Dr. Jan Noltz's lab will be here to talk about the JHD Research Initiative. And upcoming events, August 22, HelpRHD's second annual symposium will be at Mission Inn Riverside. So please go to the website, helprhd.org, click on events and register. September 11 is the FDA, I believe it's September 11, the PDUFA meeting. That's an acronym, PDUFA meeting for HD and also Parkinson's. October 21 to 24 is our HSG conference in Tampa. October 25th and 27th, we'll be going to IACP again. This will be in Chicago this year. So go to Help for HD's first giving site, and we're raising money to do the exhibit again. November 7 is Nick's Run for HD in San Diego at De Anza Cove at Mission Bay. And December 10 to 12 is the World Stem Cell Summit and RegMed Capital Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. So those are some events that are happening. Hope you guys can tune in to our next show. And thank you, Dr. Goodman, again for spending this awesome time with us. We love you. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Don't forget to tell all your colleagues, families, and friends about Help for HD Radio, and visit us on our website, helpforhd.org, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for everybody in the chat room. And everybody have a great week. Thank you, Dr. Goodman.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Okay. Good night, everyone.
Jim liked them. He didn't like Dr. Unfall.
Mm-hmm.
That was not a good match, those two.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard anybody like Unfall.
Yeah. He's just so kind of arrogant and pushy and, nobody needs that, you know? So.